I'm speaking with Dan Shaw, who is the spokesperson for IMF Decoder. IMF, you might think, means the International Monetary Fund, which it does, but not in this case. This is the same initials, different organization, different meaning. And I will let Dan tell you what that's all about, and then we'll get into the very interesting, very surprising, but very true information he's going to share with you.
In this case, the IMF stands for Individual Master File. This is the primary file kept on everyone by the Internal Revenue Service, and today we're going to be talking about the IRS, the income tax, and the law, balancing those scales by due process.
How did you yourself get started with studying this information?
For me, it was almost a blunder. I unfortunately was involved in a very messy divorce about 11 years ago, and the state in which I was in was stepping all over my children's rights. I started asking the question, where in the Constitution does it say you have to be 18 years old before you can exercise the unalienable rights endowed by your Creator, assumedly at the point of creation? And I started a search of the Constitution to find out, and I couldn't find it. But I found other interesting things in Article 1, Section 2, Paragraph 3 that said direct taxes must be apportioned among the several states according to their census. And that triggered another question. The tax issue became an entire byproduct of that original search and prompted 11 years of study. The more you study and the more you learn, the angrier I got, the more I studied.
So tell me about what IMF Decoder actually does. I know there's a lot of background we need to cover, but let's start at the top.
Let me start with two little quotes. One is from Thomas Jefferson. I love the Founding Fathers and what they gave us in this land of the free. Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free, it expects what never was and never will be, to take some excerpts from that full quote. And one of my favorite little quotations says, when a man who is honestly mistaken hears the truth, he will either quit being mistaken or quit being honest. It's kind of an either or. So today we're going to deal with some truth, not my interpretation, but strictly what the law says. Now, when we talk about who is IMF Decoder, it's actually sometimes easier to say who we are not. And we are not tax protesters. We don't argue the legality of the ratification of the 16th Amendment or the Title 26 Internal Revenue Code. There are people out there who are much better equipped with research to do that, people like Bill Benson that we support 100% in his efforts. The man has been a marvel. I know him personally. But that's his arena. Our arena is working within the law. We acquiesce and say that we believe the Title 26 Internal Revenue Code and the Code of Federal Regulations are legal and constitutional when applied as written to the proper subjects. We are a First Amendment group of federal lawyers, paralegals, and legal researchers who devote our time strictly to the intense study of the Title 26 Code and federal regulations. We do not give legal advice, and we do not give tax advice. What we do with folks is we assist them in using the Freedom of Information Act properly to obtain copies of their official IRS records. And then we help to decode those files that IRS keeps on you. IRS can have many different files. They can have the individual master file, the non-master file, the master file specific, an AIMS file, an MDISA file. And you have to ask specifically in the right manner to obtain the proper records. But unfortunately, you can audit your telephone bill, your credit card statement easily every month to make sure the charges are yours. If you have bad information on a credit report, you can challenge that and clean it because it's written in common language. But with the Internal Revenue Service, everything is kept in coded form, and it requires the use of their code books, their internal revenue manuals, and their legal enforcement manuals to decode to find out actually what they say on you. And under the Freedom of Information Act, everyone has a right to know what any public agency holds on them in the way of personal information. So we then help audit for due process errors, statutory errors, and even purposely fraudulent entries that create an appearance of a tax liability where none may have previously existed. And the sad truth is the majority of Americans have never had a liability to pay a tax on their labor, and the Supreme Court has ruled that consistently for over 108 years.
Now, the average citizen has really no idea even that the individual master file exists. How would this come to their attention under normal circumstances?
Well, unfortunately, most of them don't know it exists until they're kind of slapped in the face with it in a court action. It is the master file that goes into court. It's not your returns or statements. Now, what happens with these records is very simple. The first 1040 form you ever filed opened a tax module and created the individual master file with the Internal Revenue Service. Through the use of erroneous, quote-unquote, and even purposely fraudulent codes, they have created what's called prima facie evidence of a tax liability against you. To define prima facie from Black's Law Dictionary, that means at first sight or on the face of it, or so far as can be determined from first appearance. In other words, prima facie evidence will sustain a judgment in favor of the evidence if it goes unrebutted. And the only way to disprove it is by proper rebuttal. Now, that little word to rebut is a very powerful little word. It means to take away the full effect of something, or basically to take the wind out of their sails. When the IRS or any plaintiff in any action produces evidence that raises a presumption of a liability, and the opposing party adduces evidence that shows that presumption to be ill-founded, then it's said to be rebutted. The IRS's own literature will tell you that they operate on rebuttable presumption, which is kind of its own species of a legal presumption which holds good only until disproved. The unfortunate thing is, unless you rebut those erroneous codes, they have what is called presumptive correctness in any court or collection action against you.
When this becomes known to you, it's kind of baffling. First of all, it's in code, it's in technical language. You don't know the law that is being referred to by the entries in the individual master file. If you can just spell out for us, why is it so important to become aware of this and to take steps in relationship to it before you have any particular dealings with the IRS, before there's a problem?
Again, Thomas Jefferson said, "The price of freedom is eternal vigilance. Know the law and be well disposed to use it." Unfortunately, Americans think that if they don't hear it from Dan Rather, Tom Brokaw, or John Stossel, that it can't be real, and we don't read anymore. We expect to get all of our information and education from other people and from news media, and we don't follow through. In cases such as United States v. Buford, Staniford v. Wilcox, Stipp v. United States, it was the master file transcripts which were considered at court hearing instead of the tax returns of the individual. And they used the individual master file to show that the taxpayer received adequate notice of assessments. Whether or not they did, if it's coded that they sent you a letter, whether or not you ever received it, that is sufficient because it's in your master file and it's unrebutted, so therefore it stands as fact.
In a sense, what you're saying is that the government has prepared a case against you in case they ever need it. And they've loaded the evidence in their favor, and the evidence is inaccurate. They may have mailed you something, they may not have mailed you something, you may have done something, you may not have done it, but they say in the record that you've done it, and unless you rebut it, it's presumed in this prima facie evidence, first sight evidence, to be in fact valid.
In a nutshell, that's it. And that's amazingly important because I'll even go so far as they've not only built the case, but they've done so through fraud. One of the federal lawyers we work with, her master file was coded. They had her as the manufacturer of pistols and revolvers living in the Virgin Islands. My personal master file had a tea freeze on it, which labeled it as a narcotics case in the Virgin Islands.
Now, have you ever been to the Virgin Islands?
I've been to the Virgin Islands. But if I'm a narcotics dealer, I've been out of stock for 35 years. I wish the CIA would get me some inventory.
Did this note on your Virgin Islands business interests predate your visit to the Virgin Islands?
No. I was a tourist in the Virgin Islands. I never knew, though, that the Virgin Islands held so many residents. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you that virtually 100% of the people who have ever filed a 1040 form have their file coded as living in the Virgin Islands. And there's a reason behind that. But before we get into that, let me go back and just momentarily say that by rebutting the invalid evidence in your file, you turn the tables. And this is very important. You not only remove their prima facie evidence and the assumption of liability, but instead you have replaced that with your own prima facie evidence of fraud and violation of due process of law within their own files. Well, that then becomes what's called exculpatory evidence. Should they ever try to take you to court, you can subpoena their records to show they knew you never had a liability. That's very important. Although in over 17 years and over 10,000 people who have been decoded, we've never seen the IRS take a single one to court afterwards. In fact, we've demanded administrative hearings on behalf of those people that we've worked with, and they will not even grant us an administrative hearing. They do not want this information going public because this is not a template program. It's not an end run around the system with any scheme to avoid anything. It's simply tucking the law book and the Code of Federal Regulations under your arm and charging the opposing line, using that as your defense. They can't say that their law is wrong. They can't say that their law is frivolous. And they can't change their law without an act of Congress. We don't condone any illegal activity. We operate strictly under the laws that Congress has mandated the IRS to strictly adhere to. And what a lot of folks don't realize is there can be over 100 codes on the first page of your individual master file alone. And each letter, each number means something. Just the little letter T in a particular place, in my case, meant a narcotics freeze. Understand, importing narcotics for pharmaceutical reasons is a legal occupation. However, we have delegated authority to the federal government to regulate that. But if they want to come seize all my property overnight, then they can claim that I obtained it all with illegal drug profits, even though I was never really involved in that occupation, legal or otherwise. So that has to be rebutted and removed. And many, many others. There's blocking codes, hold codes, freeze codes. The actual IRS computers are programmed properly to accord with the law and with the Constitution. So in order to put an American who never had a liability into a collection action, they have to enter blocking codes and freeze codes so that someone can manually override the computer programs into a collection mode that it otherwise would not go into. The 150 code alone that we find on everyone's file, and I have it right here on the IRS's own letterhead, in answer to a Freedom of Information Act request, this was their response. The transaction code 150 indicates a tax liability assessed when a tax return is filed and a return is posted to the master file. The Virgin Islands 150 relates to the tax liability assessed on a U.S. self-employment tax return, Virgin Islands, Guam, and American Samoa. I don't know if we'll be able to get into a lot of the statutory definitions of the tax code, but within the private sector, there is no such thing as self-employment. U.S. self-employment means that you contracted your services to the government without benefit of being a covered government employee within its own exclusive federal jurisdiction. So if you did that, well, then you can file a 1040 form under the Federal Employee Salary Tax Act. Other codes that people might want to be aware of, and we have all of their ADP manuals, their LEM manuals, their legal enforcement manuals, the internal revenue manuals, the agent's handbooks, the disclosure agent's handbooks. We have all of their manuals, so these codes come right back out of their literature, and in rebutting the erroneous information, we include the pages from their own manuals as exhibits, which therefore they have to change. But other things you might want to be aware of, they don't look real intimidating, but a little number 914 in the proper place says that you're under an active criminal investigation. Just to look at your master file, you wouldn't know what that meant.